8:30 a.m. KSDP Radio. I'm Kels Hetherington, and this is Meet the People for November the 11th, 2010. My guest this morning is Doctor of Medicine Peter Lipsky. Dr. Lipsky is internationally recognized for his research in B-cell biology in normal and autoimmune disease settings, T-cell macrophage interactions, mechanisms of immune cell activation, and the development of novel therapeutics for rheumatoid arthritis and lupus. Dr. Lipsky currently sits on the Lupus Research Institute's Scientific Advisory Board, and he has conducted research funded by that organization. I have invited Dr. Lipsky on the program to discuss the impact and the prevalence of lupus in Native Alaskan and Native American populations. Well, with that introduction, Dr. Lipsky, welcome to the airwaves of the far north and Alaska.
Thank you so much, Cal.
Well, it's good to have you here. Maybe you could start by helping us understand, just give us an overview of what lupus is for those of our listeners who may not be as familiar with the disease as are you.
Well, lupus is an autoimmune disease. By autoimmune, auto means self, and immune refers to the immune system or the host defense system that protects you from infection, from tumors, and allows you to survive in a complex environment. In autoimmune diseases such as lupus, the immune system turns upon the host and begins to recognize the host cells and tissues as foreign and causes disease. In lupus, the disease is primarily manifested by skin rash, joint inflammation, arthritis, involvement of the kidneys, central nervous system, and a variety of other organs. So it can be a devastating condition for people that are affected by this autoimmune disease.
Now, how long does it take from the time that this is diagnosed for the disease or condition to fully set in?
Well, Cal, this is one of the real problems, because in its early stages, lupus can be very difficult to diagnose. Signs and symptoms may be nonspecific. Patients may have fatigue, may have a bit of arthritis, perhaps a skin rash. And one of the real problems is for physicians, especially those who are not very familiar with lupus, is actually diagnosing these conditions. So one of the most important aspects is awareness of this condition and recognition that some of the complaints that individuals have, arthritis, skin rash, fatigue, which could be signs of early lupus, need to be paid attention to, and it's important to begin to think about lupus as a possible explanation for these findings.
And Dr. Lipsky, what percent of the U.S. population would you suspect has been diagnosed with lupus or has lupus, but it has gone thus far undetected?
Well, it's a difficult question, Cal, because lupus has a different prevalence in different racial groups and a different prevalence in men than in women. So in women, it's 10 times as common as in men. In certain minority groups, African Americans, Hispanics, and we now know that in Native peoples, the disease is much more frequent. But there may be a million or so people who have lupus in the United States, and perhaps an equal number in whom the disease has been undiagnosed.
Hmm. What can be done medically for someone who has lupus?
Well, that really depends upon the organs that are attacked, but there are a number of treatments, including corticosteroids and various immunosuppressive measures, that can be effective in more aggressive disease. And in those who have milder disease, there are a number of other treatments. The difficulty is that there have really been no new treatments developed for lupus in the last 50 years. So all of the medications that are available have side effects. Now, the good news is that there's been a great deal of effort to develop new therapies, And there are new therapies in last stages of development, and we anticipate that they might be available in the very near future.
Hmm. Now, you yourself have been involved in some of these, the research that has gone into maybe some of these new cures that are maybe approaching the marketplace. What are the novel therapeutics for rheumatoid arthritis and lupus that you have helped to develop?
Well, there are a number of specific agents. We call them targeted biologics. These are agents that have been developed using very new technologies that focus on individual factors that are driving lupus. So there are agents that which are directed specifically at elements of the immune system that are thought to be playing a central role in lupus and some other autoimmune diseases. And it's anticipated that if one surgically targets the specific cells or processes that are involved in lupus, one might be able to treat the disease effectively with much fewer side effects that are associated with some of the therapies that we currently have.
So there, just to be clear, there's not an actual cure right now for lupus for anybody, and there are a couple of different types of lupus, right? But there's no cure for any of the types of lupus.
There are no cures at the moment, but we anticipate very effective therapies that might suppress the disease and actually induce some remissions. But the disease has important genetic components, and we're not certain that this disease could ever be cured, but we're hopeful that if recognized early and treated with some of the newer agents, that we might be able to have patients get into long-term remissions so that they can go about their lives normally.
Mm. If you're just joining us here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP Radio, this is Meet the People, and I'm Kels Hetherington with Dr. Peter Lipsky. We're talking about lupus, and we're going to start talking about lupus and its prevalence in Native Americans and Native Alaskans. Looking at one study online, Dr. Lipsky, I found that it appears that Native American populations seem to be at substantially a greater risk for lupus than the population taken as a whole. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, lupus is a disease with an important genetic component. And obviously the genetic components of different ethnic groups and racial groups is quite different. And some of those genetic components seem to predispose to developing lupus. So some of the preliminary data that has been published suggests that Native American populations have about a twofold risk of developing lupus. I must say, Khaled, as a result of this interview, I actually communicated with the senior author of that paper, Dr. Esdale, in Vancouver, and asked him specifically about the risk in Native populations that reside in Alaska. And he's actually examining that in some detail now. So as a result of this interview, I think we might have some additional information in the near future.
What?
I think Alaska is very fortunate because there is a rheumatologist in Anchorage, Dr. Elizabeth Ferrucci, who works at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Center in Anchorage. And Dr. Ferrucci has just gotten a grant from the Centers for Disease Control to actually establish a lupus registry of that will compare the prevalence of lupus in Alaskan natives versus Alaskan Caucasian women, and we should be able to address the issue of the risk of lupus in Alaskan Native women in the very near future, and whether that risk is present in all of the Native groups in Alaska, or just some, And we should be able to begin then to address the issue of the genetic components that contribute to that risk.
Hmm.
So it's actually a very good time, and we should have a lot more information. Thanks both to Dr. Esdale, who's the author of the paper you referred to from Vancouver, and also Dr. Ferrucci, who is working on this problem in the Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage.
Well, Dr. Lipsky, I found Dr. Esdale's paper interesting because it suggested that Native people were often diagnosed at an earlier date or earlier point in their life with lupus, or I guess maybe earlier in the disease. And yet, 2 years after diagnosis, they were worse off than those in the broader population. That's pretty troubling. Why do you suppose that may be the case?
Well, I think the genetic component of the disease can cause the disease to appear earlier and also can cause the disease to appear in a more aggressive form. And I think that what that information from Dr. Esdale's study suggested was that the genetic component is making this disease appear earlier and appear to be more resistant to the standard therapies that are available today. Now, as I mentioned, the good news is that there's a lot of development of new therapies. And also, as I also mentioned, Dr. Esdale is in Vancouver. And what we'll learn from the studies that are being carried out by Dr. Ferrucci is whether or not the same risk occurs in Alaskan Native populations and whether it occurs in all or some of the Alaskan Native populations.
Now, you mentioned Dr. Ferrucci is in Anchorage. If you think or you know right. that you actually have lupus, should you find a specialist or can you go to the regular doctor or maybe even to Dr. Ferrucci? Do you need to find a specialist or can you just go to your regular practitioner?
Well, I think lupus is a very complex disease, both to recognize, to diagnose effectively, and the therapies are quite complex, and it's therefore extremely important to find a specialist, be referred to a specialist early on before there's irreversible tissue damage. Now, the specialists who take care of lupus are called rheumatologists. And I've looked, actually, the professional society is the American College of Rheumatology, and I've looked in their reference site to find out how many rheumatologists and where they're located in Alaska. And I must say there are a very small number of rheumatologists in Alaska, and of the ones I could find, all are in Anchorage. But I think for Native people, the good news is that there are two rheumatologists in the Alaska Native Medical Center at Anchorage, one of whom is Dr. Ferrucci, who takes care of most of the patients with lupus. I've communicated with her today, and she would be happy to serve as a reference for individuals who are troubled about this condition.
Hmm. If you're on some sort of HMO plan, it could be hard to get in touch or to get to see a specialist, especially if you're working with a disease like lupus that is often not entirely clear. The signs are sort of mixed. How do you recommend that a patient make his or her case that he or she needs to see a rheumatologist?
Well, I think there's a great deal of information about the disease that are available on websites, including those from the Lupus Research Institute. And if people are concerned that they're that they may have lupus, or that a relative may have lupus, or even that they're concerned they have lupus because a relative has lupus, this disease tends to run in families, I think the best thing that a patient can do now is to become knowledgeable about the condition and to present that information to their physician. Physicians are frequently quite open to suggestions from their patients, especially patients who are knowledgeable. And I think that it's very good for the patients to bring to the physician's attention the possibility that they could have lupus and had the physician considered that possibility. And with awareness of this as a possibility, the physicians frequently can either make the diagnosis or rule out the diagnosis, but if a physician doesn't see much lupus, he or she may not be thinking about this problem when they encounter a patient. So patient awareness can be a powerful tool to help patients arrive at the correct diagnosis and get the proper referrals that they need.
Now, the Lupus Research Institute, which you are working with to some degree, has an excellent website. It's the LRI website, and people can find a lot of information there. What is LRI doing to further the research and look for a cure to help people with lupus?
Well, over the last 10 years or so, the Lupus Research Institute has tried to identify the most cutting-edge research in the field and to fund it. And they made a decision that in order to make progress in this disease, you really had to fund high-risk projects that had a high likelihood of a positive outcome. And so they've really focused on trying to identify the most the research that's likely to make the biggest difference. And they've been quite successful. They've just done an analysis of the first 10 years of their funding, and they've discovered that as a result of that funding, their investigators have been able to gain additional funding up to 5 or 10-fold the amount that was originally given to them by the Lupus Research Institute. They've discovered that the individuals have published large numbers of papers. These have been cited many, many, many times, and that the papers have begun to lead to new insights into therapy. Now, in addition to that, I must say that the Lupus Research Institute has taken a leadership role in trying to identify what we call health disparities. And those are differences in the frequency of severity of diseases in different populations. And there is now a large awareness of the different impact of lupus, both in terms of frequency and severity in native populations, and the LRI has taken a leadership role in developing initiatives that are more than just their own initiatives, in other words, steering federal money into focusing on the problem of health disparities, especially in lupus, and trying to understand them and to deal with them effectively.
We mentioned earlier in the program that there are a few different types of lupus. Could you maybe explain some of the differences and different types of lupus?
Well, lupus is, it's been said by many, if you understand lupus, you understand all of medicine. On one end, there's lupus that only affects the skin and may cause a kind of chronic scarring of the skin. We call that discoid lupus because the lesions are small discs. At the far end of the spectrum is a disease that involves the entire many organs of the body, the central nervous system, the brain, the kidneys. It can cause rapid and acute kidney failure. It can cause a variety of problems with the brain and can even cause rapid death. So between that spectrum, you can see you can have a disease limited to the skin all the way through a disease that could be rapidly fatal. So it's a disease with many, many faces, and that makes it extremely difficult to recognize and sometimes quite difficult to treat.
I know we're getting into our final moments of the interview, but you mentioned that it can cause problems in the brain area. What type of problems can lupus cause in the brain?
Well, it can cause a variety of problems. It can cause seizures. It can cause symptoms that look like strokes. It can cause a progressive problem with mentation, so that individuals have difficulty thinking, have difficulty operating at their normal level, and basically lose intellectual capacity. Involvement of the brain is one of the most complex parts of lupus. How to deal with it is a very complex situation. And again, if a patient has a seizure, one doesn't initially think of lupus, but it's in the differential diagnosis if that seizure occurs in a woman of childbearing age, where lupus itself is much more frequent. So again, the symptoms can be very varied in the brain, and it really takes awareness on the part of the physician and the subject with the experience to begin to put this together as a potential manifestation of lupus.
There are clearly more instances, at least proportionally, of lupus both today and the recent past in the native population as compared to the prevalence of the disease at large. But is there any real reason to suspect that this trend is here to stay? Basically, is ancestry a determining factor absolutely in who develops lupus?
It's a contributing factor without a doubt. However, if you have the appropriate ancestry, it doesn't mean that you'll get lupus. I mean, it's a risk factor. The risk factor may give you a 2- or 4-fold increased likelihood of getting lupus, but certainly it doesn't mean you definitely will get lupus. We know that there are certain environmental factors, cigarette smoking, for example, that contribute to the likelihood of getting lupus. But again, it's not inevitable. So because somebody's is of a particular racial group that has an increased frequency of lupus or has a family member with lupus, that doesn't mean that that individual will get lupus. What it means is that their risk is slightly increased.
All right, I feel like I'm going to see the doctor talking with you, and in a way I am. Now, you say that cigarette smoking and other environmental factors can be causes that help bring on lupus. What other environmental factors can put someone at risk for developing lupus?
Well, the major one that we can identify reproducibly is cigarette smoking. So if there's a message, it is that cigarette smoking is not only bad for you with regard to lung function and heart function, but it can also contribute to an increased likelihood of getting autoimmune diseases, of which lupus is one, but rheumatoid arthritis is another. So a message to your listeners is that cigarette smoking has many more risks than they probably have thought about, one of which is lupus, another of which is other autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis.
Would you think that those environmental factors just increase the risk that those who are already predisposed to lupus might have full-blown lupus, or that someone who was not going to get lupus actually has the development of the condition occur?
It's a combination of the factors. If you have the risk and you are exposed to environmental triggers like cigarette smoking, it increases the likelihood that you'll get lupus. So all of them work in concert, and there's some information that's beginning to emerge about how that might be, but certainly it's a combination of effects that makes it more likely that an individual will get lupus.
All right, Dr. Lipsky, thank you so much for joining us. Just one final question. After people have heard all this information on the radio, that they may have more questions. Where online, because people often go online to look for descriptions of diseases and symptoms and whatnot, where online do you recommend that people go? A lot of people go to WebMD. Is the LRI website the best place? Is there another website that people can go for information? Where should they travel online to find more about lupus?
Personally, I think the two most reliable sources of information would be the Lupus Research Institute website, and the National Institutes of Health also has a very good website. And there are a number of universities, including Johns Hopkins University, the University of Michigan, and others that have very good websites that are reliable and have been put together by experts in the field. So I would say a good place to start is with the LRI. Another good place is the NIH, and the other university sites, I think, all have excellent and objective information and that has been prepared by experts.
All right, Dr. Peter Lipsky, thank you for taking the time to join us on the radio here in Alaska, and good luck in your research going forward.
Thank you so much, and I hope to get a chance to come visit Sand Point next year.
All right. Well, hopefully that'll happen. Thanks for your time. Talk to you.
Look for me on the Tustamina. I'll probably be there.
Oh, you actually are planning a vacation, I see. You've looked around on the web, huh? Or you've been to Alaska?
I come to Alaska every summer, but I've not had the pleasure of coming to Sand Point, and it might be fun. I've looked at the website. It looks like a beautiful place.
You should definitely come out and join us and take a look around. We'll look forward to having you here sometime next summer. All right, that's Dr. Peter Lipsky.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day. Dr. Lipsky is a expert and internationally known expert when it comes to lupus. He's with the LRI Foundation and has been instrumental in what they are doing. We'll now go back to NPR at the top of the hour for the news from Washington, D.C. I'm Kels Hetherington, and that was Meet the People for November the 11th, 2010.